was a friendly conversation over a friendly glass of wine. She was talking about her life and asking me about mine. She was worried about the future and the things yet to be. But I'm really not too worried about what happens to me. She says, who do you turn to?
Thank you for tuning in. This is Matt Santos, and you're listening to episode 147 of the Mile High Show. We're creeping up on 150. We should do something special for 150, I think. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what's going on. Today for 147, I sit down with Drew Hall. He is here to talk about a lot of things, the music scene in general, his favorite venues. We talk old buildings, bars that my mom and dad, all kind of stuff. We talk about a lot of things, but primarily he is talking about his event, Saturday, September 2nd. It is the Walt Richardson and Friends, featuring, of course, Drew Hall and Blaine Long. The Cheek Tones Trio will also be playing. It is at the Elks Theater, again, September 2nd. Follow Drew on Facebook. Just go to Facebook, punch in Drew Hall, and he has created a Facebook event page for this. So sign up. Get your tickets. Purchase in advance. They will sell out. You can also pick up your tickets at PrescottElksTheater.com or give them a call, 928-777-1370. Again, September 2nd, the Walt Richardson and Friends featuring Blaine Long and the Cheek Tones Trio at the Elks Theater. Get your tickets. And you know what? While you're online getting those tickets for the September 2nd Walt Richardson and Friends show, go over to milehighshow.com. Bookmark that page. Save it on your phone's home screen. Save it on your toolbar. Save it wherever you have your favorite bookmarks, because right there, along with archives of all our old shows, all 147 of them, there is also an Amazon link. I ask you, please use that Amazon link at milehighshow.com for all your online shopping. It takes you to your regular Amazon login or your Amazon Prime login page, and you shop away like you normally do. No extra charge for you, but it lets Amazon know you got there through us, and they give us a little thank you. And it allows me to get in our fancy mobile studio, my 10-year-old Honda van, and drive around to interview folks like Drew Hall and Becky Dahlke, Darren Mahoney, Steve Simone, all those folks that have been on this show that you have enjoyed talking with and listening to. That's what pays the bills, that Amazon link. So please use the Amazon link at milehighshow.com. Bookmark it, save it to your homepage, save it to your phone, and use it for all your online shopping. It will help us out. Also, right next to that is a BarkBox link. You can use the code that link at BarkBox for a free gift for your furry friends, because happy pets make happy homes. How about this for freebies as well? The Audible link right there at milehighshow.com. You can go to Audible, choose an audio download for absolutely free from almost 200,000 titles. Pick your audio download, books, lectures, comedy, albums, Audible exclusive content, lots of stuff that you can get for free by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. You also get a free 30-day subscription. So Audible, BarkBox, Amazon, use them all to get free stuff, support the show, and help us out. It's either that or I got to go to your house and borrow money. So while you're thinking about me knocking on your door at 11 o'clock at night on a Tuesday to borrow gas money, think about that. And instead of that horrible scenario, just use the Audible, BarkBox, or better yet, the Amazon link at milehighshow.com, and it will save you from having to hide from me while I'm knocking on your door to borrow money. And while you're thinking about that, listen to Drew Hall talk about his upcoming show, September 2nd at the Elks Theater, Walt Richardson and Friends, featuring Blaine Long and the Cheektones Trio, right here on the Mile High Show. Thanks for listening.
It was a friendly conversation over a friendly glass of wine. She was talking about her life and asking me about mine. She was worried about the future and the things yet to be. But I'm really not too worried about what happens to me. No, I'm really not too worried about what happens to me.
Well, thanks for sitting down, man. This yeah. is nice. I like coming to this spot. Yeah. Give me the address again so and how folks can get in touch with you right
10,
off the top.
Sure. Like 510 South Montezuma is my lesson studio space. Two doors down from Maya Mexican Restaurant, right downtown. Kind of across from the Motor Lodge. I can see it from here. And basically, they can just reach me with my phone number, 928-848-6784. And that's, you know, for my lessons or booking stuff, too.
Yeah,
you know?
And follow you on Facebook because yes. you're very active on there.
Very
we were just
active.
Talking about your upcoming September 2nd gig that we'll get into. But you are one of the local artists, the local performers that really utilizes social media, specifically yep. Facebook, to get the word out.
Yep.
And it's obviously proven real successful for you. So get on Facebook, just punch in Drew Hall, and it'll all pop up.
That's true. Everything's on there. Yeah.
How old is this building? Do you know?
I don't know. That's a very good question. It has the old like metal ceilings.
Yeah.
Which a lot of stuff downtown has. I had no idea, to be honest with you.
Neat coming through. A lot of the buildings that I come through for either doing photos or podcasts or just hanging out.
Yeah.
And I'm sure same thing when you're playing. You know, you see the you see what the customer sees. You know, you walk in, you sit down, like you said, whatever that. I think tin, and I think some of the old ones had copper, you know, some of the big ones.
Right. The Palace has it. When Hooligans was open, that was their ceiling as well. Yeah.
But, you know, you see on the outset what they are, and in certain areas, and I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to mention any places by name because I may need to hit them up for sponsorship and stuff. But some places will, you walk in and you can tell. You know, they're trying to make a place look authentic. They're trying, you know, whatever the theme happens to be, whether it be cowboy or roadhouse or, you know, whatever. 50s was real popular, you know, years ago, where you'd walk in and everything had like the Happy Days look to it years back. The nostalgia thing. You walk in and sometimes you can tell a place, you know, they're trying to make it look. This is what a Western bar would look like if it was in Disneyland or at Universal Studios, that kind of. But that's what I love about coming in and around Prescott and even some of the Phoenix places and like Williams. You walk into places and like the Palace and you go, this is legit. This is the original. This is how it looked 75, 80 years ago.
Right.
And to know, you know, you're not walking into a Hard Rock or a, what was the other one? Planet Hollywood type of thing, something like that.
Yeah, something that's like kind of stamped out.
Yeah.
The same. Yeah.
That's what this building, you know, you walk in and please take this the right way.
Yeah.
And it might just be me because, you know, I'm not a tiny guy, but you walk in, the floor is kind of creaky.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you look around the hardwood, the walls and stuff. It really gives that authentic. And I'm going to guess, unless they redid it to make it look like this, you know, 50 years ago, this got to go back 75, 80 years.
I think that's probably true. Imagine. Yeah, that's my guess, you know.
That is obviously not a... I'm not an architect,
nor am I
student or anything. Do you find, especially because you played big shows? I've seen you do with full bands and you know, outdoor stuff. But I've also gotten the opportunity to watch you and like with Anton or with the Cheektones Trio, that kind of thing, or you solo playing some very intimate small spots
yeah.
in and around Prescott.
Yeah.
Does that alter how you play a little bit depending on the room? Do you feel... And this is weird. Do you yeah. like feel that history when you play in somewhere?
I think so. I think, you know, sometimes, I mean, for me as a music fan, I kind of like going to like cool, you know, smaller venues and, you know, historic places and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a place in Studio City, the Baked Potato, which is like kind of a famous, you know, jazz and other music.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that the players they get in this building. And it's really, really, really tiny. I think it maybe holds 30 people.
Yeah.
And they serve you giant baked potatoes with stuff on them, you know, like that's yeah. the name. It's not in a great, you know, area necessarily. I mean, it's kind of, the area's kind of run down around it, but it's this really cool club. And those are the places that I find kind of fascinating, places that have history, you know.
Is that history of that place like back to the folk and the coffee house stuff?
It's possible. I know it goes back 50s, a long 60s. Way. I'd have to do some research, but I've seen some of my favorite artists there.
Oh, wow.
And it's like I'll drive out, you know, 7 hours to see a show, even though, and this is, you yeah. know, it's a tiny little venue, but if you get one of your favorite people there, you're there in your lap. I mean,
yeah.
right. There's, you know, you're going to see very well what they're doing, you know?
Yeah. That's like when you, and you as a musician, you as a producer, and knowing the technical aspect of music, obviously would have a better insight of this. I don't, just as a fan, I'll like watch docs or yeah. you know, read a book talking about when people talk about going into like the, I don't even think it's there anymore, but like the old Sun Studios.
Right.
Or the Power Station.
The Sun is still there, but they're not, I don't know if they're, how much recording they're doing there. Like I know we went and toured it when we went yeah. and played in Memphis, and it's basically like a museum more than anything. Yeah.
Didn't it at one point after the recording section, didn't it like go into a barbershop or something before somebody
I don't know. That's a good. I'm not too sure of the history, but I know you can go there yeah. now, and you know they have like you know Scotty Moore's guitar that yeah. looks like you know the big giant version of Scotty's guitar, yeah. Elvis's you know first lead yeah. guitar player. But I don't really know. But I know the building exists. So you know
you hear about musicians like I say through documentaries or something where they talk about going into these famed places.
Yeah.
Or and I can't remember what it might have been on that. Oh, I don't remember. I was watching something on Netflix. And they were talking about they were able to find the board from this famed studio.
Oh, right, right.
Found it in some guy's warehouse somewhere.
Right,
and
right.
They brought it in. It's obviously outdated. It's old analog stuff.
Yeah.
But the way they get the feel from it, is that more of a mental and emotional thing, or is there a legitimate technical aspect to playing in rooms like that or studios like that?
It may be both, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a little of both. I think some of the older gear, you know, people pursue it and they want to get it because there's a certain kind of sound yeah. that you can get. But I think also some of it is just, it's kind of like that mojo thing.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm playing this room and this person played this room and there's definitely a connection.
Yeah.
You know, I remember playing Mesa Amphitheater, and I'm a big Buddy Guy fan, and yeah. I remember being on stage at Mesa
right
Amphitheater,
wall.
Right on the wall. I was on stage there playing a show, and it was kind of that moment of like, wow, I saw Buddy Guy on this stage, and I'm playing this stage. This is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, and but whether, you know, it's nothing, I mean, it was, you know, I saw him a year or two before, you know, not like just, you know, we weren't playing together or anything
yeah.
like that, but it was just like, wow, you know, I remember being in the audience at this show, and now I'm on this stage. It's really cool, you know, and
yeah.
it's just like, it's a feeling. More than anything else,
yeah.
You know?
We've talked about this before, and again,
yeah.
we don't want to downplay any places because there
yeah.
are some great spots in and around Prescott. But
yeah.
what are some of your favorite spots to play here? And why?
You know, right now, I mean, like the Ravens, one of my favorites. I think the thing I love about the Raven is it's unique in that I've been able to bring in original artists that are focused on original music.
Yeah.
And do shows, you know, and it's not the pressure of like, well, you gotta play X amount of covers, or you gotta make sure that, you know, you play classic rock and that you play these songs. It's like, I can bring in an artist that plays all original music for 3 hours and they dig it. They go, this is what we want. And that's amazing. That's a very unique little niche. And, I've got a lot of support from them in bringing in Walt Richardson or doing my, project with Anton, where we have the full band. Like you were interviewed us for a CD release. That's become a full-time band with Gigi Gonaway and Malin Hawk. And we can do that. We can go and play 3 hours of Latin infusion music and get booked, you know. So many kudos to the Raven for that, you know. With the Cheek Tones, we have great shows at the Birdcage, especially the new cage with the bigger space, bigger stage, great sound man. You know, those gigs are always good. So
how is it being that now? I'll drop back to the Raven.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I love it there.
Yeah.
Visually, you walk in and it's so tight, it's so intimate. You guys are basically playing in a window.
Yeah.
In a window box.
I love it. It's like people are all around, they can see you, it's just accessible. It's kind of like that the baked potato I was talking about. These little smaller places that you're just right there. The people and you, there's no divide between you and the crowd. It's really cool. Yeah.
Now, which is great. And the lighting in there.
Yeah.
It gives you that it gives you that real intimate nightclub feeling in a tiny, tiny spot.
Yeah.
And you can't help but right when you walk in that, you know, you walk in the door and you're at the stage.
You're there, man. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you just feel that buzz, that excitement. And then, of course, with you and Anton or the Cheek Tones, you know, you've got your crowd in there.
Yep.
You know, they're dancing, they're moving around, they're enjoying themselves.
Yeah, and they're right there. I mean, sometimes they're literally on the stage, which that can be a problem. That can be, we have to have some kind of a line, you know.
Otherwise, you just got to hand them an instrument and a microphone.
Right. It's like, hey, guess what? You're playing this show.
You know
right
what?
Now.
There's a few in there that I'm sure would jump at that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing that I would say too, another spot. I mean, there's so many good spots. You know, El Gato Azul is a really cool spot, and they support, you know, me doing student showcases and all this stuff. And well, you know,
the flip side of the Raven to me is also a small. And again, this is just from the spectator point
of
view.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Still small, still intimate, but the Birdcage, like you mentioned, that stage is what, 4 feet up?
Something like that,
Do you have a preference on there, or does it depend on what you're
playing? Depends on what you're playing.
Yeah.
You know, I think for like doing a Walt Richardson show or like the show, you know, with the Latin group, I think it makes more sense to... You know, I don't know, maybe that makes more sense, but I like kind of the Raven venue because we're so close and it's more, a little bit more,
eye to
eye.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when Cheek Tones play the cage, you know, especially on a holiday weekend, it's a rock concert. You know, you're up elevated on the stage. I like taking those stage shots where I can, you know, the people go back to the door and there's like this like sea of people. And that's like rock star time.
And
you know?
The
dance floor is packed. And so it's good. And I think that's what's cool about having a variety of places to play. I mean, it's, you know, it's all good stuff, you know.
Now let's talk about the Elks.
Yeah.
Because you got something coming up there September 2nd.
Yeah.
Briefly, and we'll get back to it. What do you got? Who's coming in?
All right. So the show, this is a really cool thing. The guy that kind of had the idea that made me kind of jump on it was Blaine Long. And, you know, a little bit of history on Blaine. Blaine is a great singer-songwriter, you know, has many, many original albums to his credit. But he was also on The Voice last season. Uh-huh. And so a lot of people know him from being on The Voice. He did John Hyatt's Have a Little Faith in Me on the show, did a killer version of it. But even on the show, he said, you know, hey, I basically do original music. Yeah. It's different for me to do covers. And, you know... So he's got all this great original music, and you know, a lot of people know him because of the show, but he really has a lot of material that, you know, from before the show, after the show. He has a new album coming out, but anyway, we were doing a little thing at the Raven. I was sitting in with him, and he's like, man, you know, Walt Richardson and I have the same band, which is Gigi Gonaway, Marcus Whedon, and myself. And we record at the same studio, Three Leaf in Phoenix with Sean Cooney. And he's like, well, why don't we do a show? I'd love to do a show with Walt. Yeah. I'd love to be on stage with him. I'd like to do a split bill. And I finally was like, yeah, I want to do this because Colette from the Elks had mentioned that the option or the opportunity to do shows at the Elks now, you know, and be able to do like a thing. And I'm like, well, I didn't want to necessarily do like what I normally do and just put it at the Elks because, you know, people can see, you know, the act plenty of times. But it's like, well, this is different. This is something that's never been done before. We've never had Blaine with a full band and Walt on the same bill. And then for good measure, I'm like, well, let's put the Cheektones Trio in this too, because I wanted to kind of have an opener and I really wanted to involve, you know, some elements of what I do with Cheektones as well and make it all inclusive.
Yeah.
You know, we even got Anton sitting in. Nice. You know, he's going to do a few songs with Walt and I. So it's really kind of a combination of, you know, like local favorites plus these guys that are from around the state. So long story short, we got the Cheektones Trio opening up. So that's Don Cheek, Gary Uecker, and I doing our acoustic three-part harmony thing. Then we go to the Blaine Long Band, which is Blaine, myself, Gigi Gonaway, Marcus Whedon. Then we go to Walt Richardson and Friends, which is Walt, Gigi Gonaway, Marcus, you know, and myself. And, you know, at the end, I want to do like a little jam, get everyone up and to do like a conclusion song or something to that effect. But the idea is you get all of this stuff in the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Walt shows have been really successful at the Raven. We're going to be continuing to do those. Next one is like a Thanksgiving weekend. So it's a little ways away. But, and I kind of did that deliberately. Like, if you want to see the Walt band, it's like, you got to come to the Elks unless you want to be in the winter, you know, you know, but you know, all of these things coming together, you know, you've got Walt, who's an Arizona Music Hall of Famer. You've got, you know, Gigi Gonaway, who we've talked about on the show before, Mariah Carey, Aretha Franklin, Steve Winwood. You got Blaine Long, who, you know, did, you know, made it up to a good level on The Voice, plus all of his, you know, solo stuff. So there's a lot of different reasons to come check it out. And it's never happened before in town, you know.
And what a great venue at the Elks.
Yeah,
now, they, I was just talking to Becky Dahlke.
Yeah. And Becky and Blaine are good friends.
That's
our mutual friend.
She was talking about growing up elementary school, junior high in Prescott and the Elks being the, you know, at that time, the theater, the local theater, pre-mall, pre-Harkins.
Yep.
And then, of course, the history of the Elks going back much, much farther than that. With live shows, live music in the big production aspect of the Western music and things way back when. And it seems like in recent years, since I've been here the last dozen or so years, it has featured primarily some of the tribute acts and things. And then you said, I'm sorry, her name?
Colette.
Colette. Yeah, yeah. I've talked to her a couple of times in the past with shows coming up to promote them. But with you guys playing there, some of their holiday shows with original local music, Wes Williams Band, they had a great show there a couple of months ago. And then you guys rolling in, is this something that, and again, I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, no,
speaking on behalf of the Elks. Is this something we're going to see more and more of? Original live music, some of the regional and bigger names coming through?
This is, you know, that's a really good thing that you mentioned, and I was going to address that. But I would say this, not being able to speak on behalf of the Elks, what I would say... The Drew Hall Hopeful is this. I would say shows like what Wes did Cinco de Mayo, what Candice Devine did in the beginning of June, and what we're doing here on September 2nd, I think are very, very important. I nothing against the tribute acts. From what I understand, they're very talented. I haven't been to see any of them because I'm always gigging. But, you know, so nothing against that. But I think the opportunity to have a local or at least Arizona-based show. I mean, our show is not fully a local show. I mean, the guys are coming up from Tempe and Chandler and such. But to have either, you know, Arizona-based music or local music in that beautiful theater, I would love to see it happen as much as possible.
Yeah.
Now, what I believe, and this is where I sound like I'm doing like my telethon or something, what I believe is that if we do well, then it will.
Yeah.
You know, if the community comes out for these kinds of shows, then suddenly these bands – that are making original music are going to have an opportunity to play at a beautiful theater in their hometown. And I think that's amazing. And if we get the support and people come out and they buy a ticket and they do the show, then you can do it again. You know, I mean, that's the, I mean, the reality is, I mean, as much as we'd like to say, well, we just want to do it, it has to make sense for the theater because they're running a business and, you know, the tickets have to be sold. So the musicians are paid and such, that kind of thing, you know?
Speaking of tickets, where can folks go for tickets?
So there's two spots. One would be calling the Elks at 928-777-1370. And the other would be going to PrescottElksTheater.com. And if you just scroll down through an event or two, you'll see the Walt Richardson / Blaine Long Cheek Tones Trio little thing there. Also, if you're a Facebook friend of mine, I post a thing every day. And so I have events and I have direct links to buying tickets. Yeah.
And that's one great way to not only ensure that you get a ticket, because I anticipate this not going to be a standing room only.
Right now we're August 7th. We have sold about half of the downstairs already. So I'd say we have roughly 150 tickets left on the bottom floor, which means that I would recommend people grab them now. And there's no bad seats. The room's small enough. Anywhere you sit is cool. You know, we haven't opened up the balcony or anything, and I guess that would be a consideration if we were to sell the downstairs. But I'm definitely encouraging pre-sales. It's just go get them now, and you know you got a spot. Yeah.
And another great thing about social media, about Facebook, the event page, the event link that you're sharing and that you've created, as people go on, it's got a link to go on and buy your tickets.
Exactly,
And it also is a way to early on let the Elks know, we're going to be there. These are the numbers to expect.
Yes.
This is the type of entertainment we want. Like you said, there's so much vast variety of entertainment that is hosted there.
Yep.
But when we see you guys play the trio or we see the full band at either on the square or at the Raven or at the Birdcage, or you see the Walt Richardson shows at the Raven in a smaller atmosphere, which is great.
Oh, yeah.
But to see that full, basically three-act show, the opener, the middle, the headliner, and then on top of that, the planned jam at the end.
Yeah.
In the Elks, when we talked about bigger places or intimate spots, the Elks is a real good mix of both.
Yeah.
It's a opera theater. It's a beautiful thing with a very deep stage.
Yep.
The section between the front of the stage, I don't know, what do you call that? And the first, first row, is that like orchestra pit?
Yeah, I guess we call it the dance floor one. For this, but the orchestra pit,
For these type of shows and for Wes's show back in May.
It was the dance floor,
It was the dance floor. So even though it's kind of a grand theater.
Yeah.
In the sense of, you know, compared to the Raven, compared to the Birdcage, when you guys get in there and when a full band gets in there and you got your set band and then you got horn section and you got whatever else is going on there, the way Wes had it going, it turned in to a very tight, very intimate bar scene.
Right.
But had the grandeur, the elegance of the theater, man, it was a sight to see.
Yeah, I was out of town that weekend as well. Although he has a show
working.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, he has a show in Halloween show.
Yeah, October.
So
he's coming back.
I like this though. We're getting like every couple of months or every other month or so. It seems like there's a local artist in there.
So
it's cool.
One of the good ways to experience music on a grand scale, but still be right there at eyes distance away. It's not like you're going to, Comerica or, Talking Stick and you're, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day.
Yeah.
I personally don't like stadium shows. If I'm at
I'm
a stadium,
a either,
if I am at a stadium show, it's to photograph it.
Right.
And I have gone to shows, Springsteen at the Oakland Coliseum, and the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, how would I shoot this?
Right.
I want to be in the pit with my camera because you're basically watching a TV screen, a very big TV screen, you're watching a TV screen.
Right.
To hear the quality of music you guys are putting out and being blown away by that wall of sound that's going to be coming off the stage. But you're right there, even in the back row.
Anywhere in the spot.
You know, I've been back where, you know, throw him out a commercial, Teddy Leonard, Preston Pro
Town. He's doing sound for us, by the way. Yeah.
You know, back on his sound booth area, back, complete back row. That's where I store my gear, you know, and steal Ted's coffee and Altoids.
Altoids, yes.
You're still right on top of the band, basically. Yeah. So the Elks has that great combo of being the big theater show and the intimate tavern bar show at the same time. It's just something, if you haven't been there for that, if you haven't experienced that, if you haven't felt that reverb going through your body listening to the music go, get on out there, man, and buy the tickets. And again, follow those event pages, comment on them, share them, respond to them, because that lets the Elks management and other bands, other regional acts, other venues around here know what we need is we have the audience for both.
Yes.
Or all types of acts, all types of venues, and we're going to pack the place out.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. How do you like playing there?
I like playing there a lot. It's been a while since I played there. My friend Clyde Score, who shares this teaching space with me, he had the Arizona Jamboree for a long time. And when I first moved here as a teenager, we used to go watch the Jamboree, you know. And I don't know, how long have you lived here?
04.
Okay, so this is pre... Well, now, they might have done the Arizona Review.
I think the review might have been... Yeah, I remember the hearing those things coming through, but I didn't get a chance to see
it. But, you know, back with the Jamboree in, like, well, like, late 90s, it was, like, every Saturday in the summer, if I'm not mistaken. So they would do a show. Maybe two. I can't remember how they did it, but... You know, and it was kind of like a variety, kind of, you know, country style variety show. But they would have like guest artists, and Anton and I would open up for them. They would, we'd do like the, they'd be, it's like people would be seating and we would start the show, or we'd sit in with them or whatever. And it was really cool, you know, and it was such a great venue to be at and to perform at. I mean, it was just right. Like you were saying, it's just the right size. It's not gigantic, but it's not small. So you can get a good sized crowd. But everyone has a good space. They can see what's going on. But yeah, I enjoy playing there a lot. I spend a lot of time playing there. Yeah.
How do you like that? The backstage green room area.
It's cool, man. If it's the same as it was, I remember it's been renovated. I remember what it was like. It was cool. Yeah.
I the first time I was in there, I think was like 05, 06.
Okay, so that's when I was around there. Yeah,
but. It hasn't changed since then. I was in there a couple months ago.
It's the same as I remember. Yeah.
No, it looks like it's the same as it has been since about the 20s.
Wow. Yeah.
Which, again, folks at Elks, please take this the right way. Yeah, it's it's old, but it's history.
It's
cool, walk down there, and you walk down that right off to the. Educate me on this, because I'll mess it up.
Yeah.
When you say stage right, stage left, is that from the stage or from the audience?
It's like you being on stage.
Okay.
You know, it's
you're on stage right, that stairway that goes down.
Right.
It zigzags down into a little waiting area, and then the dressing room's off to the back. That black and white checker down there, and the old mirrors and the lights and stuff. And there's a piano down there.
Yeah, there's still a piano. Yeah. I remember there was one down there.
It's like you're walking. I don't know. Everything that I think of either relates to old TV shows or old movies, but it reminds me of like when you see the old documentaries or the biopics of. You know, like when the Beatles were playing Germany, what was the Cavern Club?
Cavern. You
know, really tight places, and then they got tight shots of them running to the stage. And that's what it reminds me of. It's that old historic feel. It's tight. The ceilings are so low.
They are low, yeah.
And it just has that, you know, you can go into, you know, like, no offense, because I love the place. I love the management, the Prescott Valley Event Center.
Yeah.
You know, for sporting events. Yeah, I've seen some shows back there. But you go backstage.
Totally different.
You go backstage. And it's a warehouse, you know, the really tall ceilings and the rafters and the security desk. And they're bringing in food and stuff. That's great. That's a big, you know, it's similar to like the old stadium shots and stuff like that. But when you're in backstage at the Elks, it feels like you're at an old theater, which is exactly what you are. And it reminds me of those old movies, those old film clips, because it's so tight, and you know, I'm back there trying to get a couple of shots, trying to stay out of the way, and you can't be out of the way. No. You know, a guy my size has a trouble being out of the way anywhere, but in there, I'm, you know, it's a little claustrophobic, sure, but in a good way.
Yeah.
Because you can feel the energy of
the
performers.
Yeah, there is. It's something very exciting. You know, all the people, all the players be getting ready for the show. And there's, it's like being part of a special club, you know?
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I do what I do. I mean, when I first started in photography and photojournalism, way back when, early 80s, one of the reasons I did that and one of the reasons what really drew me to it was to kind of be behind the scenes. You know, when you're at a ball game, you know, shooting a baseball game or something, you're in the dugout, you're in the locker rooms, you're in the media area in the back, you're at a concert, you're backstage. You're not part of it. You know, you're kind of the help.
Right.
Similar to the food vendors and everything else.
Yeah.
But you get to see things that the general public doesn't get to see.
Yeah, there is something special about
that. Yeah, that always intrigued me. Even press conference stuff, you know, politicians come. I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, you know. Over the years, I've photographed several presidents and campaign stuff and press conferences and things. And you see the things you don't see on TV.
Yeah.
In these days with social media and, you know, the internet and all that, you get to see a lot more of that.
Yeah.
But back then, if it wasn't the main shot
that was
on Channel 7, that's all you saw.
Yeah.
And for me as a, you know, 17, 18-year-old kid getting these jobs and being able to cruise around backstage, you know, seeing a politician yelling at their assistants and stuff. Pete Wilson, I remember, he was doing a ribbon cutting thing at a car plant in the Bay Area, and one of my favorite shots I ever had was him off to the side picking his nose.
Nice.
And obviously, it didn't run anywhere.
Right.
You know, I was ahead of my time because if I had that now, it would have been, you know,
posted on Instagram,
viral on Instagram and Twitter. But yeah, you know, it's just seeing that backstage stuff, and it's fun. Even now, you know, downtown, you know, I'll go talk to somebody at the cage, and we're out in the I've done interviews in the back alley, you know, in between sets and stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, I don't want to leave this off without talking about your students,
sure,
because you have such a strong history of not just supporting the local music scene and working with those venues that support the music scene, but you are very involved, I would say more so than others, and on the forefront of mentoring the younger musicians, the younger artists.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about those under your wing now. Who do we got in there that's breaking out and doing good things?
Well, you know, right now, it's a good time. You know, and some combination of current and former students in Sugar and the Mint, for example.
Yeah.
Those, I mean, they just won Telluride Bluegrass competition. They, if you remember back when we were interviewed in May, preparing for Play It Forward, Boys to Men, they were the group that opened up before Walt Richardson and I. And, you know, they went on to win Telluride, which is a major feat, you know, and so they're doing amazing things. Who's in that group? There's a big group. So we got Keenan Hammock, Johan Glidden, Glory Glidden, Kiva Keith, Matt is, what is Matt's last name? Matt isn't a student of mine. Matt's a really good kid.
Is he the drummer?
He's the mandolinist.
Mandolin,
I'm forgetting his last name and I apologize, but he, you know, and then we have, Jason Howard on the bass. So they have, you know, a good sized group.
Now,
and they're really talented. Yeah.
That's their core band.
Yeah.
Some aren't students of yours.
Right.
But some of these folks are also bleeding into other music scenes, other performers.
Like Johan. Particular. Johan is, I mean, you know, right now, I mean, he has the Fault Lines, which is his original three-piece band with Kazi and True Borman. Kazi's a student of mine. And a really, really great three-piece rock group, and they're doing some stuff. He's also playing with Wes. Johan played with Wes at the Elks the last time and has been doing some of the road trip stuff that Wes has been doing. And so that's happening, you know. And then I've got a lot of other young students that are not really in bands, but we just did a student showcase at Gatto and really starting to see some new people emerge, you know, and be able to do things. And some of them that were at Play It Forward, like Anthony Hernandez or Jake Cannon, that are not in bands, but they're right there.
Yeah.
You know, they're right at the point where they just, that final leap of getting into an active band, and then they're off and running. You know?
Well, yeah. And that also goes to, lends itself to how you work with these musicians, these artists,
yeah.
Because, you know, the kind of the stereotype, and go back to, you know, the 60s and 70s when I was a kid, you know, there was the high school bands, the garage bands, and that's right. What everybody wanted to do.
Sure.
We're at a point specifically in this area,
yeah.
And in music in general, again, as the spectator, you enlighten me if I'm wrong,
yeah.
But that's not even necessary anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have to say, okay, I like guitar, or I like keyboard, or I like whatever, and that's what I'm studying, and that's what I'm doing, and I'm writing some songs. Who can I get to play with me?
Right.
Who can I get together to jam in my garage and then go out and get a couple of gigs, do the school dance, or do whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
We have the audience for it. We have the fan base here, and definitely we have the venues,
yeah.
Where it could be one kid and his or her guitar,
yep,
and maybe a mic and an amp, maybe not,
yeah.
And they can go into a place and play and showcase their music right here in Prescott. And Elgato, you mentioned, I'd like you to again stress, we've talked about
yeah, yeah.
it before, but please stress the importance of having venues like Elgato,
yeah.
That really support the local music scene. Who's the management over there?
So we got Barry, and then Terry, you know, the main, and then the whole staff's really a big
How
support,
important so. Is that for young ones just spreading out their wings to be able to play in front of actual people instead of just mom and dad?
Very important. Very yeah. important. And it's something that I've never been a big recital teacher.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big things that I do I try the hardest to do this is to give them performance opportunities when they're ready to do it.
Yeah.
So that means that generally the more advanced students are the ones that are getting the opportunities, but it's kind yeah. of a, you know, work hard and reward concept of like, okay, you're going to work hard, you're going to do this, well, now you're going to be on stage. Now, the thing that's really cool about like Gatto or any venue that lets me have a student on stage, because there's lots of them. The Raven's done it.
Yeah.
I've had students up at the Cage. I've had students at Folsom. I've had students everywhere. And the thing is like, I don't know, it's such a cool concept, because if you think about it, you know, you have to get on stage at some point.
Yeah.
And you have to play for an audience that's not just your parents or not whatever. And I had people who did it for me. And when I was 17, 18 years yeah. old, working at Prescott Music Center, and all these guys had bands, they're like, all right, come sit in, do your thing. And I wouldn't have been able to, I wouldn't be doing anything if yeah. I hadn't had those a couple leg up. Like, well, how do you get on stage for the first time? How do you get experience playing for an audience? How do people know you?
Yeah.
You know, and it's super important to have the venue support. And I really appreciate the trust, because I don't run this by anyone. I don't say to Barry, hey, you know, okay, here's the students of the showcase. Here's their demo tapes.
Yeah.
Sit down and listen to every one of them and decide if we can play. They just trust me that I'm bringing in people
yeah.
that aren't going to drive away their customers, you know. Because they have a business to run. You know, we did the showcase and they had, you know, full space full of people eating dinner and, you know,
yeah.
running a business. So it's not, you know, it becomes a thing where there's a certain level of trust in this industry, you know, that way. And if you keep that,
yeah.
keep giving good product, then it works, you know.
And that's a key point, because there are local open mics.
Yep,
I've been
yep.
to a few.
And there's a couple
where
of ones,
you
yeah.
can go in and you've been playing, you know, somebody's been playing guitar or whatever, or singing for weeks
yeah.
or months, and they're really not, you know, they're not that good. They're learning. There are spots where they can go up and do that,
yep.
Which is great. And they have very accepting and welcoming audiences, because it's like-minded people. It's like,
yeah.
let's see how we can do it. And if they mess up, they mess up. Or
right.
if they're not as polished, they're not as polished.
Yeah.
Because you have to get that practice in.
Yeah.
There are then the other showcases.
Yeah.
Pretty much, and I'm going to put you guys on the spot,
no,
but if I see the Thursday night Don Cheek open mic,
yeah.
I know when I walk in there at the Cage on a Thursday night, that I'm going to be seeing some of the best artists in the area.
Sure.
And some from out of the area that travel for it.
Yeah.
If I see a Facebook post or a flyer in a restaurant or in a bar and it says Drew Hall and friends, Drew Hall and whoever, if it's somebody I've never heard of, I know I'm going to be hearing top quality folks.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. You
have developed that reputation, so I can fully understand you go to one of these bookers or a restaurant manager and say, I'm coming in, or I would like to come in, and I'm bringing three people.
Yeah.
I would be very surprised if anybody says, well, who are they?
Right.
Other than the fact so they could put it on the flyer.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, they're not, it's not an audition.
It's like, I wonder, are they any good?
Are they good? Are they going to drive my customers away?
If they're coming in under the Drew Hall banner or the Don Cheek or the Wes Williams banner or any number of artists of your caliber around this area, there's no question that what I'm going to see on this stage or behind that mic or on that stool are going to be top notch. I remember it's completely earned by you.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
The first time I was at Don's open mic, it's been a few years now.
Yeah.
I just kind of strolled in. I was doing something down the street and popped in.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away at this is an open mic. This is a paid show. This is a ticketed show in other parts of the state and other parts of the country.
Sure.
And same thing when, you know, yourself and Anton or the Cheek Trio, you know, you can just wander around Prescott and stumble into a restaurant or a bar and hear top tiered where you would normally have a very high cover charge in other parts of the country, other parts of the state. And we're so fortunate in that area living in and around Prescott to hear that.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool music that's happening. There really are, you know.
But the flip side of that is when there are showcases like we have September 2nd at the Elks, where you are going to see not just that, you are going to see that 100-fold in the participation, in the atmosphere, in the energy.
Yeah.
What are the ticket prices going for this?
They're $15. Oh. You know, there were 20 and 15, but the $20 seats are pretty much all sold. Unless you're a single person who comes by yourself, there's like one $20 seat left. Yeah. Everything else is 15. Seriously, like someone left like a little hole in the middle of one of the aisles. One $20 seat. It's like, oh, who's going to buy that seat? But
it'll be filled.
It'll be filled. We'll figure it out. Someone will go by themselves. But yeah, so it's $15, you know, and
folks, we've done, that's a couple of cups of coffee in some of these places.
And, you know, you're seeing, you know, Walt Richardson, who's, you know, Arizona Music Hall of Famer. You got Blaine Long and his history with, you know, The Voice and his other things. J.G. Gonaway, who, like, I think I've mentioned this before, but, you know, he was playing with Mariah Carey when I was, like, a 13 years old. And he's playing Saturday Night Live.
Thanks for making me feel old.
Well, he's only, like, 10 years older than me. I mean, he was pretty young when he was playing with her. But I mean, you know, I remember watching, you know, the Patrick Swayze hosted Mariah Carey.
Yeah,
we talked about that, right? With the Chris Farley and all that. You know, Gigi was like off to the side for that skit, you know. But when I was a kid, you know, in New York in my apartment watching that show, it's like, I'm going to get to play with this guy. And I've been able to do it frequently. So it's really cool.
Beautiful.
It's an honor, you know. Yeah.
Hey, tell me a little off subject here, but you had a show. Oh, I want to say it's been a couple of weeks ago. When I saw it posted, I was so tempted to jump in the car and head down. But you and Wes over at Copper Blues?
Oh, yeah.
How did that come about?
That, you know, like, Wes and I will play together when the stars align, you know? Like so he'll call me about, hey, I got this one. I have this gig. Do you want to do it? And 9 times out of 10, I'm always booked.
Yeah.
But I just happen to have that night off, and I'm like, oh, yeah, let's do it, man. It was really fun.
I'm going to have to do some serious editing on it. This turned into the Wes Williams promo show. His head's too big already. But how is that at Copper? I've been there because I've done it. You were right next to Stand Up Live, right?
Yeah.
That one.
Yeah.
Because there's a isn't there two?
There's two. Yeah. There's one in Tempe. Okay. This was the one downtown.
I've been in there when I've been to and interviewed some folks at Stand Up Live. Yeah. I haven't heard any live music there. Now that. The stage is up behind the bar.
It's like hooligan style.
Yeah.
It's like where old school. Yeah, behind the bar. Yeah.
The mosh pit is the bar.
The mosh pit. If you want to mosh, you got to like hang out with the bartenders. But no, it's an interesting space. And it was a split thing. You know, it was like we started out really kind of like happy hour, kind of backgroundy.
Yeah.
You know, and then suddenly at some point it became a show. You know, people started to focus and get into it.
Yeah.
And you know, we had some really good jams and some fun. And it's always a pleasure playing with him. You know,
nice.
We don't get to do it a lot, but when we do, it's fun. You know,
it's one of the hazards of being a true working musician.
Right.
Is you're booked.
There's only so many Friday and Saturday nights, you know. I mean, obviously, there's Wednesday night gigs like The Point, which is really cool. But, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, there's only so many of those. And so, obviously, if there was infinite amounts of Fridays and Saturdays, you could play with everyone all the time, but it just doesn't work out. And
you know, I'm glad you mentioned The Point because it slipped my mind when we were talking about the local venues.
Yeah.
That's another spot that really visually lends itself.
Oh, yeah.
To a great show.
We had Cheek Jones Trio.
Little tiny ceiling.
Oh, it was killer. Yeah. It was great.
Now, when did they open up as The Point? It's been 2 years?
I feel like it's been maybe 2 to 3 years, maybe. Because I remember we were doing duo gigs, Anton and I, trio. Yeah, maybe 2.5, 3 years, something like that. Yeah.
That's a cool little spot.
Yeah.
Visually beautiful in there.
Yeah.
It's just a neat little show. I like when I've gone in there to interview. When you walk in, you know, the restroom's on the right and the bar in front of you, the music to the right. When you go straight back against that, in that back corner, you can kind of hide up against the rock.
Yeah, it's true, huh?
I like that. It's got those big tables. You can talk.
Yeah, very comfortable.
I've interviewed there several times. I've done a couple of shows. Now, had you played there previous to The Point?
I had, yes.
Sundances?
Yes, I had.
Tell me about
had.
Sundances.
Totally different vibe, man.
Because I love... That was one of the first
totally
places...
totally different vibe.
First places I went to... Well, actually, Hooligans and Matt... Hooligans and Matt's were the first two places I went in when I moved here.
Oh, wow.
Just to check out.
Yeah.
And then Sundances, the main reason was because at the time... It was one of the only places that had Guinness on tap.
Oh, okay.
So I had to go in for that.
Oh, okay.
And the feel of it reminded me of a couple of old San Francisco bars.
Oh, really?
And one particular place in Berkeley that I used to go to quite a bit. And just that low ceiling, all the graffiti on the walls. My memory is very selective. I remember things how I would like them to have been.
Sure.
That happens a lot, especially if you talk to my sister. Nice. She says half of my memories never happened.
Nice.
But in my head, they did.
They did,
and some of them still are. I think, didn't they have either coasters or beer labels, like, just plastered all over
there
the place?
Yeah, there was, like, CDs at one point, like, all strung across the back.
And... That could say two things, CDs and CD.
Oh, right, yeah. No, actual, like had big a real, silver, yeah.
Yeah, it had a real, it had a real underground cave kind of basement. Bar kind of feel.
And we played there when I was in Big Daddy D and the Dynamites. That was like some of the first gigs that, well, I mean, the first couple of years we had that band, we played there a lot.
And was rockabilly style?
It sounds like a rockabilly name. It was really more like straight blues and eventually kind of evolved into like funk and soul stuff. But
wasn't there a similar name band that was like straight rockabilly?
Yeah, there were a lot. There was a period of time. This is weird. I've been gigging here since I was 21. I just turned 40.
Oh,
so I've been, you know, getting up on the 20 years of performing in town. Although technically, I think I started when I was like 17, like gigging, really, you know. But I mean, like gigging every weekend and gigging a lot since I was 21.
Did you have to go in the alley after each set?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I always kind of was fortunate. People always thought I was older. I could care less about drinking. I just wanted to play music.
Yeah.
I wanted to see music. Yeah, I've seen a lot of changes. For a long time, there were blues bands everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, for a while, that was like the format. Everyone was hiring blues bands or like, you know, funk, soul, blues, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think we just, like the blues bands kind of burnt the scene out a bit, you know?
What
I mean, there are,
like,
you know.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
There are blues bands out there now still, yeah. But there were a ton of them back then.
That was the thing.
That was the thing, yeah.
What was Sundance's like when you were playing there? Sound-wise, crowd-wise?
It was rough, man. I mean, it was like paying your dues, man. I mean, you know, I mean, and no offense to anyone who owned it in the past and, you know, and such, but it was a bar, you know? Well, it was a bar, you know? There was nothing about, like, this is a club or this is a venue. This is a bar, you know?
See, you say no offense, and I say those are the places I love hanging out.
Right, yeah, so it was not in a bad way, but, I mean, it was definitely one of those places that you look back on, you know, if I'm going to, you know, I'm going to play the Elks Theater, it's like, you know, where I go, hey, you know, that was paying my dues, you know, in the playing at places like that. But there were a lot of them. There were, you know, in Camp Verde, there were a lot of places like that. And, you know, and it had that very much, you know, like bar kind of feel. But it was also fun. We had a lot of fun and we played, you know, a lot of gigs there and it was a good time.
And now you walk in and it looks like the library at a, I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah, see, I think it's grown with me.
Yeah,
you know?
The wood, the leather, and
because maybe at 21 I would have been like, oh, I want it to be like real you know, underground, and you know,
slap up some chicken wire.
Who knows what's gonna happen? But now it's like at 40 with my, you know, young kids at home, I'm like, man, I dig walking in there and knowing that, you know, it's clean and you know, people, my people can come and watch the show and it's not seedy and you know, it's
there's like, something to be said about a place where you can feel the trouble from last night. As
right.
You walk
yeah.
In the
right.
Door.
Right. You go, ooh,
like, I like this. Yeah, I can still smell it.
There's a place. There's a place we used to play in Camp Verde. I don't think it's there anymore. It's called Bowlers. And I swear, I don't know how this guy hired a band, but he hired bands for like half the month. He'd hire them 2 weekends in a row. You'd just leave your gear there. There were 10, 15 people there at a time at the most. Yet he always hired a band, and if it was the weirdest thing. I don't even know, you know. They had one of those things where you had all the patrons, their drawings on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, here's Joe, who's been here every Saturday for 25 years. Here's his picture. And, you know, some of them had passed away, and they had little flowers by him or whatever. But, I mean, there's a lot of places like that.
there was a place long before my time in San Leandro, California. From what I know, the buildings are still there. But back in the 40s and 50s, there was the Washington Club and the Little Club. They were across the street from each other. The Little Club wasn't much bigger than this room.
Wow.
Maybe this room in your entryway.
Right, right.
And it had a little bar in the corner.
200, 300 square feet.
The opposite corner had a stage that was maybe the size of two pallets and about that high.
Right.
And my mom and dad grew up next to each other.
Okay.
And next door to each other since they were little kids. And then after high school started dating and subsequently got married. But when they first got married, mid-50s, that was kind of their little hangout. That and the Washington Club.
Yes.
And they would go dancing there. And it was almost not quite a basement, but it was lowered. And it was literally a little club. That's what it was called.
Yeah.
The Washington Club across the street was not much bigger than that, but still really tiny.
Yeah.
And that was like the local drinking home. I had a couple uncles that worked there. That was their hangout. And I think, depending on which aunt and uncle you talk to, one of my uncles was a part owner at one time.
Yeah.
And we had an old 8mm. I may still have it. I don't know if I could play it on anything. It was New Year's Eve, I want to say 1957.
Wow.
About maybe a minute and a half clip of the Washington Club, and everybody was, you know, sharkskin suits, greased back hair, little mustaches, dancing, and it was just funny to watch as kids. Well, flash forward to, I want to say 97, 98. Maybe even 2000. I don't know, anywhere. And that me and a buddy of mine who lived in San Leandro. This is a suburb of Oakland, California. And I'm telling him stories about these two places. So we drive down there. The Little Club closed, been abandoned for years. But you could peek through the window, and there's still like old glasses. It hasn't been touched in probably 30 years.
Wow.
Just been waiting to tore down so somebody could buy the property. The Washington Club's still open.
Nice.
And we walked in. And I swear it was the same people sitting in there from that video or that film
clip.
Right,
they've just been there
forever.
They're
just a little older. And there's a mural on the wall that the bartender tells me about that somebody painted like in the late 70s. And it was You remember the opening of Cheers?
Yeah.
That right. old, it was kind of like that. It was a mural on the wall of the bar on the opposite side of the wall.
Right.
And it was cartoonish drawing, but it had people on it. And we're looking at the faces. And we walk in there, and, you know, I'm at the time 35-ish, maybe close to 40. And I am the youngest person in there by at least three times. I mean, there's some 90-year-olds sitting at the bar. It's the middle of the day.
Right.
They're drinking their highballs.
Right.
And me and my buddy are sitting there, and we're looking at this wall. And the bartender hustles on over, and she's, you know, cigarette in her mouth, beehive hairdo. She's 70.
Right.
And takes our order. And I'm looking at the wall. I says, who are these people? She goes, oh, that's a bunch of people used Those to hang guys, out in yeah. there. They used to... And I said, that one right there looks like my uncle.
Yeah, it probably is.
And she goes, "That I know him. That's Rocky." And it clicks. So I pull out my wallet. Tony Rocky Santos.
Wow.
I got his picture in there, and I show it to her. She starts telling us old stories. But that was one of those bars I could still feel the fights from the early 60s in that
right.
place.
So it's all in the walls, man.
You could just feel the history in there. I don't even know if it's still up anymore, but next time I'm in the Bay Area, I got to cruise by, see if the Washington Club's still open.
Wow, that's cool, man.
But yeah, they had that mural up there, and my uncle's picture on there. The drawing looked the same as the picture I carry in my wallet, but yeah, he was a little thug. He had Rocky tattooed on his knuckles.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking hand tattooed from the 30s or 40s.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, they were, there was a Santos in every third grade class. There was 14 kids.
Wow.
One girl, 13 boys, 13 or 14 boys and one girl. Yeah.
Wow.
So there was one in every class, and it was not a pretty sight for San Leandro back in the 30s and 40s. Anyway, off the rails. That's how I get. Hit away again, September 2nd. Mm-hmm. Tell everybody who's going to be there, how they can get tickets, and where they can find info.
So I should be able to recite this without looking at my little flyer here, but I will. So basically what we've got is September 2nd, Saturday, September 2nd, coming to the Elks Theater. We have Walt Richardson and Friends. We have the Blaine Long Band, and we have Cheek Tones Trio opening up. Walt Richardson, Arizona Music Hall of Famer, Blaine Long, a great singer-songwriter who was on The Voice last season, Gigi Gonaway on drums with all his cool Aretha Franklin, Mariah Carey, Steve Winwood, George Benson, et cetera, et cetera. And then I'm in all the bands, so I may have to change outfits or hats or something like that. I don't know. I'll have to figure out something, change hairstyles or something. but it's me going from one to the other, but it's going to be really cool. And it's really just, you know, a night of a combination of, you know, really, you know, kind of legends of Arizona music, as well as some local favorites, you know. Basically, elkstheater.com to get tickets, or calling the Elks at 777-1370.
Cool. And utilize that Facebook event page that you've created, and follow Drew Hall on Facebook. Find out where he's playing.
Yep.
And show up on September 2nd, but also show up wherever there's live music going on in town.
Yeah.
Let those restaurant and bar managers and bookers and venues know that that we want more of this, and we can use more spots, and you can use a couple of extra Fridays and Saturdays in here. So if anybody has the designs for a time machine,
or just expand the week. There is no more Monday or Tuesday. Now it's Friday and Saturday, part two. Then that's cool. You know, I'm down. Or anyone wants to do Monday or Tuesday music, let me know.
Cool. All right. Well, Drew, thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and, thanks for having me. Yeah.
I'm going to try and sneak over there if I can get out of my job early enough.
Cool.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Sounds good. I'm all you've got, Mr. Too Blunt to See. You don't have what it takes to be a man. I don't care, we were born to fight. It's much too soon to sleep tonight. You let everybody know I'm an evil man. But I am not too blind to see the jealousies and insecurities. Happy man.
creeping like thieves and caused me to sleep for 10,000 years. Baby, hold my hand, whisper my name. 5 years ago may never change. Nobody ever gets this many chances. But I am not too blind to see the jealousies and insecurity. Happy man. But I am not too blind to see the jealousies and insecurities. Be alone and happy.